This is New York Game Day with Anita Marks and Chris Canty on 98.7 ESPN.
Round two of your divisional playoffs and two games in the books. We are going to break those down as well as look forward to the remaining games that are on the slate for today, as well as dive into some of the news and notes around the league and, of course, specifically with the Jets and their new hire as Robert Saleh is the new head coach of your J-E-T-S, Jets. But gentlemen, again, Anita Marks, I'm your host. I'm here with Chris Canty as well as Mike Tannenbaum. Guys, let's dive into the Packers-Rams game. As we know, the Packers, they beat the Rams 32-12. Goff, just four sacks, I want to say, for like, I read a negative 26 yards, no Aaron Donald, tears in his eyes at the end of the game. And Rodgers, another MVP performance. Listen, they were able to run the ball right down the mouth of the Rams. Play action was in full effect, which definitely helped Aaron Rodgers last night. Chris, let's start with you. Your thoughts on the Packers-Rams game.
Well, that game was won at the line of scrimmage, both sides of the ball. I thought the Packers' offensive line did an outstanding job creating movement at the point of attack on those Rams' defensive linemen in the run game. And like you mentioned, Anita, that set up opportunities for play action. Aaron Rodgers averaged 15 yards per attempt on play action passing yesterday. So to me, that just set up the opportunities and ultimately the knockout blow to Allen Lazard, who made up for the miss that he had in the third quarter with that touchdown grab to put the game out of reach. So I just thought that that game was won by the offensive and defensive line of the Green Bay Packers. If I was the coach, if I was Matt LaFleur, I'm giving those guys game balls.
Yeah, you know, I see it similarly. I think we're starting to take some of this greatness for granted. They lost a great left tackle in Bakhtiari, and they put Billy Turner in at left tackle. Billy was a guy that I knew from my Miami days. He's a functional guard at best, and that's the greatness of Aaron Rodgers, where he could compensate, go against the number one defense in the league. They have 484 yards of offense without their left tackle, and I think the game has just slowed down to such a point for Aaron Rodgers. He is at such a higher level. And of all the stats that really stood out to me, and I do want to give Jared Goff some credit, you know, dealing with a very significant thumb injury on his throwing hand, but yards per passing attempt, which again really dictates, is illustrative of getting the ball down the field, takes into a lot of account of meaningful actions in the game. The Packers were almost double, 8.2 yards per attempt, where Jared Goff and the Rams were 4.8. So Jared Goff was getting rid of the ball quickly, checking down, putting no pressure on a defense. And of all the statistics, most defensive coaches start with that one. And when you're double your opponent, you're going to win most of the games.
So now what stands? You've got a Packers team waiting to see the result of the Bucks and the Saints game. We're going to dive into that with you this afternoon. We have Jenna Lane, who does a phenomenal job covering the Bucks, who's going to be joining us, I believe, at 10 a.m. Yeah, 10 a.m. today on the program to give us some insight in regard to the Bucks. As we know, guys, the Saints have beaten them twice, three times. Is that possible? Yes, it is possible. Never in the history of Tom Brady's career has he been beaten by a team three times in the course of one season. So we'll see. Will the Saints be the first team to do it? So second game, and I've buried the lead here, right? I mean, the Bills over the Ravens, 17-3. This was not the game script I was expecting. Whether Lamar, you know, was forced out of the game because of a concussion, that pick six with Johnson obviously was a big momentum change. And then, of course, he gets the concussion. He can't come in to miraculously create this late-minute drive to maybe tie up or beat the Bills. But both defenses stepped up in a big way. I had a lot of prop bets in this game on overs, over in rushing yards for Jackson, over in rushing yards for Josh Allen. Overs did not hit because, really, we talked so much about these two teams' offenses and their quarterbacks coming into this matchup, and the defenses really were the star of the show. And then, of course, Justin Tucker, Mr. Automatic, misses two field goals. I know the weather conditions and the wind was just absolutely brutal, but it just goes to show you how important special teams and field goal kicking is, especially when you get into the postseason. So, Chris, let's go back to you. Again, the Bills, now they advance. They're waiting for the winner of the Kansas City and Browns game later on this afternoon.
Yeah, well, I mean, you mentioned it, Anita. It's not the game script that we thought. We thought there were going to be a lot of points in this football game, but I think the weather is the unforeseen circumstance that led to the game playing out the way that it did. You know, I mean, in those windy conditions, clearly it affected the passing game. Both quarterbacks had some issue with accuracy down the field, missed some wide open receivers. I mean, there was one time Josh Allen in the second half misses a wide open Stephon Diggs. I mean, he's got about 5 yards of separation, and Josh Allen doesn't miss those throws. But we saw him and Lamar Jackson miss some throws that they usually would hit, and that has to be attributed to the weather. Same with the kicking game. I mean, the 28-yard punt by Sam Cook is what set up the first scoring opportunity for the Buffalo Bills. I mean, so you saw that it was a factor. How often do we see Justin Tucker doink field goals, you know, with less than 50 yards? I mean, it's the first time he has multiple misses in a game in less than 50 yards on the attempt. So I thought the wind had a lot to do with how that game played out, but the surprise is the outcome, because the Buffalo Bills were largely a one-dimensional team last night in terms of trying to throw the ball around the yard, yet they still were able to find a way to make enough plays to win that football game. And the pick six by Teron Johnson was just a backbreaker, because you thought in that moment with the Ravens driving the ball into the red zone, into the third quarter, like this was an opportunity to really, really make it a football game. Because they started to gain some momentum with that drive, and then just throwing that pick six, Teron Johnson takes it 101 yards back for a touchdown. To me, based on what we had seen the first three quarters, you knew there was no way Baltimore was going to come back down two possessions.
Yeah, I see it a little bit differently, which is, you know, for Lamar Jackson to take the next step in his career and to be really thought about on that sort of elite platform that we just talked about, Aaron Rodgers and maybe Josh Allen's there. Jackson was only 2 of 10 last night when he was pressured. That's 20%. That is just absolutely unacceptable. And what's going to happen is, going into next year, guys, if I'm playing the Ravens, I'm going to take out that Bills blueprint from last night. And, of course, the weather was a factor. You know, Justin Tucker was the first time in his career he missed 2 field goals under 50 yards ever. So that was obviously a factor, but he never looked comfortable. He made a couple really good throws, and I agree, Chris, they were coming back, and the Teron Johnson pick six was obviously a huge play. But the point being, it's always interesting when you listen to a broadcast, a lot of the game plans come out from the production meeting, and it was very clear what Leslie Frazier and Sean McDermott were going to do. They were going to pressure Lamar Jackson. That's what they said they were going to do. That's what they did, and Lamar answered with going 2 for 10. And they're going to need answers for that going into next year, because until he can beat pressure, he's going to see a whole bunch of it. So, hey, give the Bills a ton of credit. That was a complete win. It's really remarkable, though, when you look at the games yesterday, the Bills didn't run the ball until the 14th play of the game on offense. That's really remarkable. The Green Bay Packers rushed for 188 yards. So, you know, you got two really good play callers, Brian Daboll for the Buffalo Bills, Matt LaFleur for the Green Bay Packers. And they were basically 180 degrees on how they approached the games.
Yeah, I read a stat that the Buffalo Bills offense, they came out the gate with 19 straight passing attempts.
Yep.
19 straight passing attempts. So really, I mean, again, I'm a little disappointed in the game, obviously, because I lost a lot of money.
Oh, my gosh.
All the prop bets I had. But but also beyond that, I'm being funny. I'm trying to be funny here. But,
sure.
You know, we were expecting, you know, all the talk, all the hoopla all week long, you know, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, two explosive offenses. And let's be honest, not to take anything away from solid defensive play. And we know defense and running the football is what wins championships. Looking at that Rams game, listen, Cam Akers had a day against the Green Bay Packers. If their defense could have showed up, as horrible as Goff was playing, I mean, I think they won last week in spite of Goff. I think they could have done it again, but their defense didn't show up. So defense and running the football wins championships, and you have to respect that, and I do. But I am a little disappointed, you know, in watching that game. I want to say I believe I fell asleep at the start of the third quarter. That's how bored I was.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't the most entertaining football game. But the one thing I will say that made the difference is I thought the Bills had a great game plan on defense. I mean, they realized that you're going to have a hard time trying to hold that Baltimore Ravens rushing attack down. So what you have to do is on early downs, you got to try to create some negative plays. And I thought they did that by being able to bring some pressure from the second and third level. I mean, you got three defensive backs that had TFLs in that game for the Buffalo Bills. So, I mean, that just shows you their attention and Sean McDermott being able to dial up some play calls, some run blitzes to be able to disrupt the rhythm of that Baltimore Ravens offense. And knowing that it was a windy day, it was going to be hard for Lamar Jackson to throw his team back in the game, especially with the way that they defended him, crowding the middle of the field, forcing him to try to throw the ball down the field and outside the numbers. That's something that Lamar Jackson has struggled with his entire career thus far. And so under those circumstances, you knew it was going to be even tougher. Not allowing him to set his feet, forcing him to be on the move and throw that way, I think that's why they couldn't get the production that they were going to need in the passing game in order to be able to get back in it at the end. So I just thought it was a good performance by the Buffalo Bills. And again, I'm surprised that they could win a playoff game under those conditions with a non-existent running game. I mean, you knew their run game could be compromised because they had no Zach Moss. But, I mean, Anita, just 16 attempts for 32 yards. There was no way under those conditions that I thought Buffalo could win a game. But they absolutely did it, and you got to tip your cap to them because they did it with the defensive side of the ball, which surprised all of us.
What else was interesting to me, guys, was when you look at the other side of the ball to me, I thought initially there was an opportunity. I think I was with Anita where I really felt like there was a real chance for Baltimore to win this game. I felt like the way Josh Allen was playing, it was a little bit of like that Houston game from a year ago, that Houston playoff game. You know, Josh Allen was only 1 of 6 in terms of throws of 15 yards or more down the field. So I thought that there was actually a window there for the Ravens to maybe, you know, take control of the game, because I thought Josh Allen wasn't playing anywhere close to what we had seen for most of the year. And again, weather conditions certainly had a factor in that. But I thought the story of the game overall was Leslie Frazier and that Bills defense. So I think if I'm the Bills, I come out of that game, I'm concerned because I can't run the ball consistently at all. And Josh Allen, was that a one-game aberration or not? But he missed a couple of home runs himself.
Again, Anita Marks, Chris Canty, and Mike Tannenbaum. So, again, just to recap, Packers now waiting for the winner of the Bucks or the Saints, and the Bills waiting for the winner of Kansas City or the Browns.
This is New York Game Day with Anita Marks and Chris Canty on 98.7 ESPN.
All right, gentlemen, a lot to unpack there. Again, the Jets hire Robert Saleh, defensive coordinator for the 49ers. He comes in with a 4-3 defense, play a lot of cover 3 zone. You heard Dan talk about the anticipation of him hiring offensive coordinator Mike LaFleur. Of course, his brother is the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, and you see how much success he's had with Aaron Rodgers. Dan referenced the Kyle Shanahan system, which many feel would fit Sam Darnold's skill set. So, again, a lot to unpack here. I love the hire. And really, the most important thing for me, and I'm curious, and Mike, I'd like to go to you first on this, because of all the years of covering the NFL and covering hiring and firing of head coaches, I think it's so imperative. I think it's so important that you bring that coach in early so that he can start establishing his staff. Because there's a lot of guys out there that I know would rather be on, you know, this coach's staff, but that coach wasn't hired until late in the hiring process, and they didn't have a chance to wait around. They needed to make sure that they were going to get a paycheck, so they went with this coach because he was hired earlier in the hiring process. And one thing I think that it doesn't get discussed enough in regard to Joe Judge is the staff that he put together that I think is a really fantastic staff of coaches who not only coach well, but teach well. And I think that's really important. So I like the fact that the Jets struck early on this. And so I'd like for you to elaborate on that. And also, of course, Mike, your thoughts on the hire.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, Anita. I think overall it was definitely a good hire. I think when you go back 2 years, you know, Adam Gase started off with a terrible press conference, and he lost the benefit of the doubt. And I've been in the room multiple times in my career where the owner's sitting there like, are we going to stay or are we going to move on? And at some point you need the benefit of the doubt from some meaningful constituency. It could be the players. It could be the coaches. It could be, candidly, the media. And Adam had none of that. And I think what we're going to see with Robert Saleh is from day one, he's going to earn the benefit of the doubt from all constituents because he's likable. He's a natural leader. I think there'll be some big bumps in the road because he's never been a head coach before. But I think he has a sort of persona in this market where he will be able to survive and learn from them. I can speak from firsthand, guys, that the first year and a half that I was the GM of the Jets, I made a ton of mistakes. And I was the assistant GM for 5 years, and I was just fortunate. We were winning a lot of games despite some of the mistakes I was making. And I think you make a great point, Anita. You look at Kevin Stefanski in Cleveland, he brings in Bill Callahan. You look at Joe Judge in with the Giants, he brings in Jason Garrett. So I think it would be important for them to bring in at least one former head coach. As it relates to Mike LaFleur, I represented his brother Matt. It's an incredible family. They're great people. They're great coaches. I think it probably enhances the chances that when it's all said and done that Sam Darnold's the quarterback this year. I don't know that, but that would be my strong suspicion that at least for a year with Mike LaFleur's offense, which is, as you mentioned, we'll see a lot more of quarterback movement, get him out of the pocket, play to Sam's strength. I think that probably bodes well for the Jets, and that makes the second pick that much more intriguing.
Yeah, well, I'm with you on the staff, Mike. I think it's going to be important for him to bring in experienced coaches because when you're in a new role, especially in the NFL and such a competitive business, there is going to be a learning curve. That part of it is inevitable. But what the one thing I do like about Rob Saleh is that he's aware of it as a coach. After he took the job, one of the things that he said in an interview, he said, no one coach can serve all the needs of the players. Like, you have to have coaches that have different perspectives, that have different strengths, just so you as a staff don't have any blind spots. And so I think that a coach that has that type of mentality is going to be well served, especially in a New York market, because it's tough. And you mentioned that Adam Gase never got the benefit of the doubt. I think one of the things that was working against Adam Gase when he took the job is that he got fired in the same coaching cycle that he was hired. So there was a lot of show and prove when it came to what Adam Gase was bringing to the table, because there were other candidates that Jets fans felt like could be more qualified or would be better in that job. But going back to Rob Saleh, I like the energy, the enthusiasm that he approaches the coach's profession with. And probably the thing that I like the most about him is what the players say about him. Like Richard Sherman and Fred Warner and others, in saying how great he is in terms of a communicator, his leadership skills, those intangibles, and then just his overall coaching style and making sure that he tries to see it through the players' eyes so he can adjust his scheme and get more production out of his guys. Like, that to me is important. Like, having a coach that's willing to try to understand your perspective as a player so they can give you more constructive criticism so you can go out and apply what they're teaching you. That's important. Like, that's one of the things that Bill Parcells did better than almost any other coach that I'd ever been around. Like, just that ability to be able to understand how you see the game and then be able to teach it to you in a way where he could get the result that he was looking for. Too often with the Jets this past year, we've heard from the coaching staff, the play call isn't the problem, it's the execution. At some point as a coach, you got to realize either what you're calling or how you're teaching it, it is creating the results that you're getting. And it just seems like Rob Saleh understands that he has to have a collaborative approach with trying to get the best out of the athletes that he's going to be coaching in this generation.
Yeah, and one thing I'd like to add, too, is, like, if you go back to this year, like, one of the things that, to me, was most impressive about Robert Saleh is they lost three really good players, Jarski, Tart, Nick Bosa, D. Ford, and they were still, you know, there's a lot of statistics where they were still top five.
Yeah, they're top five defense.
Yeah, yeah. And that, to me, of all the things, when we talk about his charisma or leadership, that's pro football. You know, we already talked about the Packers losing Bakhtiari, and they still put out, you know, had over 480 yards, and we're talking about the greatness of Matt LaFleur. The fact that they lost three good players on defense and were still top five, that's pro ball. That's what's going to happen. I mean, this year was COVID. There's always bumps in the road, and I think that's a really impressive job by him this year. Look, they went to the Super Bowl, and obviously that's special. Mm-hmm. What he did this year, I thought, said a lot about his coaching acumen.
You know, also, you know, beyond the X's and O's and the defense that he's going to instill and who the offensive coordinator is, who he's going to bring in, you know, let's be honest. This is an organization that needs a culture change, right? Like, and I think that's one of the positives that we saw with Joe Judge and the Giants. You know, they went from, Coughlin to Shermer, or actually McAdoo and Shermer, you know, in kind of like the organizational culture took a big dip and a big dive. And then now we're seeing it back on the rise right now with Joe Judge. And I think that's a positive thing that's happening over there. And I want to believe that, you know, that is you know, something that I think is really priceless, that Saleh can instill and change the organizational culture and the vibe over there at the Jets. And I think that's important, because more than anything in my eyes, a head coach more so is a leader of men. You know, you want to lead men into battle who will die for you, you know, each and every Sunday afternoon. And you know, he meets the eye test for me.
This is New York Game Day with Anita Marks and Chris Canty on 98.7 ESPN.
Do you know that the Cleveland Browns have faced the easiest schedule against offensive opponents and the second easiest schedule against passing offenses, but still rank 25th against the pass? Marinate that for a minute. A, the Browns defense had the easiest schedule against opposing offenses, the second easiest schedule against passing offenses, but still only ranked 25th against the pass. I think Patrick Mahomes in this Chiefs team comes out and destroys them today. Chris, what do you think?
Well, here's the thing, Anita, and I'm actually starting to walk back my prediction that I made Friday on DCR, because I actually thought that this would be a closer game than people were suggesting it would be, and the 10-point spread said it would be. I just look at this Kansas City Chiefs team, and for the majority of the regular season, I feel like we've seen some lackluster performances from them, but I don't think that's because the Kansas City Chiefs have fallen off from what we've seen last year. I just think that the Chiefs are so talented that at times they get bored. I honestly feel that way. And going into the second season, I just feel like this team is going to kick it up another gear. And we've seen them show that at times throughout this year. Like when they decide that they're going to play at a high level, they can go to a place that nobody else around the National Football League can match. So I see it the same way you see it now. I just feel like this Kansas City Chiefs team is supremely talented on the offensive end, and I don't know that the Cleveland Browns defense has enough answers. We had Nathan on in the last segment, and he was talking about how much man coverage they played against the Pittsburgh Steelers. But if you look at the Steelers' passing game, it's a lot of short, quick passes and allowing the receivers opportunities for run after catch, because Ben Roethlisberger can't push the ball down the field. So if you're looking for answers against that type of passing game, you would play a lot of man coverage to try to disrupt the timing between those receivers and the quarterbacks in the quick game. But in looking at what the Chiefs do, I don't think that the Browns and their defensive coordinator, Joe Woods, can major in man coverage. You're going to have to play zone, but in order to make that zone effective against Pat Mahomes, you're going to have to put some pressure on him. If you can't, then he's going to pick you apart throwing the ball into those voids, and those receivers are good enough to know where he wants them to be in order to be able to connect with that pitch and catch. So I don't see a lot of good answers for that Cleveland Browns defense playing against that Chiefs offense.
Mike?
Yeah, similar. You know, it's funny. I think the first quarter will be somewhat close because Cleveland's on a roll and Kansas City hasn't played in a while. But I think just as the game gets going, I thought your stats, Anita, really were a great snapshot of what we're dealing with, which is the strength of Kansas City is the weakness of Cleveland. And that's why I was asking Nathan Segura. I really think if I'm Cleveland, my best chance to win this game is just to take the air out of the ball. And I know so much is about passing to score early in games, but if this game was played, you know, not 10 out of 10 times, I think Kansas City would win 9 of them. If this game was played over 75 minutes, the spread would get bigger and bigger just because of the way the matchup is. And I'm sure Andy Reid's going to slide protection to Myles Garrett and make either Ogechobe, Adrian Claiborne. Somebody else is going to have to win a one-on-one. I just don't see that happening consistently. So I think if I was Cleveland, everything that Nathan Segura talked about, I agreed with. 35 minutes of time of possession, 150 yards rushing. That's going to give Cleveland the best chance to win.
This is New York Game Day with Anita Marks and Chris Canty on 98.7 ESPN. It's everyone's favorite. Can he or can't he?
I'm saying I intend to take bets as soon as possible.
Really just a segment where we talk prop bets and lines.
All right. It is time for Can or Canty. And these are actual prop bets that you could wager on this game. Well, actually, today, both games. So full disclosure, I want to say that I going into yesterday, guys, I had action on like 35 prop bets.
How do you keep track of all that, Anita?
I have it all in front of me.
Okay,
that's impressive. I type everything out. I'm tracking. I've got, you know, I've got five computers going. I'm tracking stuff. Anyway, so after the Rams-Packers game, I was 7-0 in prop bets, right? Rams team, Rams team total under 19.5. Whoa!
Wow.
Oh, man, and they had 18 points with, like, 8 minutes remaining in the fourth quarter. Oh, I was on the edge of my couch.
Mm-hmm.
MVS, over 23.5 receiving yards. He ended up with 33. Cam Akers, over 70.5 rushing yards, over 90.5 total. I mean, like, I just crushed it the first game.
Mm-hmm.
And then that Ravens-Bills game came. Dude.
All came crumbling down, huh?
I lost my butt.
That's all right, though. Today is another day, Anita.
I lost the junk in my trunk.
Today is another day.
Man, Jackson, I had Lamar Jackson over rushing yards. You know, yesterday, if he would have rushed for 100 yards, he would have matched Michael Vick's record of 11 games of 100 rushing yards. That didn't happen. Josh Allen didn't happen. I had him over rushing yards. I thought both these quarterbacks were going to use their legs yesterday. That didn't happen. You know, here's one that really gets my craw. Mark Andrews, 11 targets, 4 in-zone targets. Anytime touchdown was plus 200. Over 4.5 receptions. Dude ended up with 4 receptions and did not score a touchdown. 11 targets. 4 of them were end zone targets. I mean, it's those things. It's like when it's that close and you're like, gosh darn it. So anyway. enough about that. Let's talk about some of the prop bets that I like today.
If
Chris feels that they can or cannot, and of course, Mike, if you feel strongly about a response that Canty does answer with, by all means, please feel free to hop in. All right, so here we go. We've got the Browns and the Kansas City Chiefs. I love Austin Hooper here. If you were listening to the interview with Nathan Zagura, 11 targets, played almost 100% of the offensive snaps last week. Since Odell went down, Hooper and Rashard Higgins have had to step up in a big way in that passing game. I think Cleveland's going to have to stay up with the Mahomes. Hooper, over 3.5 receptions, over 38.5 receiving yards, and anytime touchdown at plus 250. Can or can't he?
I am going to say I'm going to take the under on that one, Anita. I am. I don't think this is going to be an Austin Hooper game. I think they're going to have to get it to their guys. They're going to have to get it to Higgins. They're going to have to get it to Landry. Those are going to be the guys that are featured in the passing game, because I think that they're going to have to take some shots, try to get some chunk plays. And one of the ways that this Browns team does it is in play action. So I think that if they're going play action, it's not to hit Austin Hooper. It's not to hit Harrison Bryant. It's to hit one of those wide receivers down the field for a big chunk. So I'm going to say under on both of those for Hooper.
Well, obviously, I hope you're wrong. Rashard Higgins, over under 46.5 receiving yards. I am playing the over here. He is the wide receiver that stretches the field. Now that, again, that Odell is out, and again, I think they're going to have to take some shots deep to keep up pace with Kansas City. So over under 46.5 receiving yards for Higgins.
I'm over on that one. Like I said before, I think this is going to come down to those wide receivers being able to be productive in the passing game. I mean, listen, if you're playing against the Chiefs, you're going to have to be able to control time of possession, but that also means you're going to have to be able to take some shots to push the ball down the field. To give you some more scoring opportunities. I think that's the wide receivers in this game for the Browns. So, I'm going to say he goes over that number, Anita. He can.
All right. Keeping with the Browns, in regard to the running backs, Kareem Hunt, as we know, utilized more in the passing game. You have the over-under 17.5 receiving yards, and I'm trying to find the Nick Chubb total rushing yards is 75.5. So Chubb, over-under 75.5 rushing yards. Kareem Hunt, over-under 17.5 receiving yards. Can or can't they?
Anita, I'm going to say... I'm going to say under on Chubb with the rushing yards, even though I think that that's the Browns' path to victory. I don't think they'll be able to execute it because I just don't see Kansas City getting off to a slow start like they did in all their postseason games last year. I think they come out a lot quicker, and that means that that's probably going to take Nick Chubb. That's probably going to take Kareem Hunt out of the run game. But I will say over on the receiving yards for Kareem Hunt just because, again, I think they'll be throwing the ball a lot more than they'll be running the ball just because of game script.
Interesting. Patrick Mahomes, like I said, I was really expecting both Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen to utilize their legs yesterday. They did not. Does Patrick Mahomes, the over-under is at 16.5. Can't he?
16.5. I'm going to say he can, Anita. I think he goes over that. I think he does.
I think that's a really low number. By the way,
I think he goes over that. Yeah,
it's minus 148. So what does that mean? You're laying $148 to win 100. I still think he goes over there.
Yeah, I think he goes over that.
And last but not least, this line is just too high for me. I don't like double digit lines. Even though I do believe Kansas City has the potential to come out and just open up a can of you know what, I still don't feel comfortable laying money on a 10-point line because any given Sunday, it is Sunday, anything could happen. But this is how I am playing this. I'm playing Travis Kelce touchdown and KC wins, Tyreek Hill touchdown and KC wins, and Patrick Mahomes touchdown and KC wins. And you can get all those at minus 120. Can or can't they? Do you think that all three guys score a touchdown for Kansas City?
Yeah, I do. I do. I actually like that one, Anita. I like that a lot. So
like
yeah,
it.
I'm gonna say they can. I'm gonna say they can. I like that a lot, actually.
All right. Taking a look at the Bucks and the Saints game. Again, I think the Saints have the secret sauce here, guys. And I know we're gonna do a deeper dive into these coming up at in about 15-20 minutes. But I think Brady is in for another long evening. Over under 306.5 passing yards in the two games against the Saints. He has not passed for more than 240. And this line is at 306.5. So I am saying under here. What do you say, Chris Canty?
How many yards we got?
306.5.
I'm going to say over, Anita. I think Tom Brady goes over that number. Yeah, I do. I do. I think we're going to see a lot of offense in this game. I think Tom Brady goes over that number.
Mike Tannenbaum, would you like to chime in here? Would you like to break?
I'm going to go over because a little foreshadowing for Tannenbaum's bombs. But I think I see this one respectfully different from you, Anita, because I think Tom Brady is going to go over. It's going to be an interesting day in New Orleans.
Interesting.
Wow, me and Mr. T see it the same way. How about that?
Yeah, you guys do.
How about that?
Maybe two bottles of wine coming for Anita. Thank you very much, Tom Brady. Michael Thomas looked great last week. I was hearing that he was feeling healthier than he has in quite a while and sure looked good. Over under 79.5 receiving yards, Chris. He has to get to 80 to win this bet. Can or can't he?
Yeah, I'm going to say he goes over. And it might not be a bad idea to take the over on number of receptions with Michael Thomas, too. I think they put him to work today in this game against the Buccaneers. They're going to have to.
Also, we just heard from Jenna Lane, and she as well feels that Gronk might have to stay back and help with pass protect. Again, that is going to open things up for tight end Cameron Brait. This is a sneaky good play, I think. Cameron Brait over 19.5 receiving yards. Can or can't he?
Oh, I mean, you could be talking about Cameron Brait getting that all in one shot. I hate to do this, Anita, but I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think this is going to be a Cameron Brait game. I think it's going to be about those wide receivers from the Buccaneers, and they've got plenty of guys for it to go around to. I mean, Godwin, you got Evans, and you got Antonio Brown. I think they'll be featured heavily in the play-action passing game. And one of the things that we saw the Buccaneers do against the Washington football team is go a little 12X. So when they have two tight ends out there in the formation, it's not necessarily two tight ends. It's an extra offensive lineman with a tight end. So I don't know how much Cameron Brate is going to be a factor in this one. So I would probably go under.
Interesting. And last but not least, let's end with Alvin Kamara and him being utilized in the passing game. Total receiving yards for Alvin Kamara, 37.5. The Bucs better against the run than they are against the pass. And again, reports are Latavius Murray dealing with a quad issue is not expected to play. So could be a very heavy dose of Alvin Kamara today. Over under 37.5 receiving yards, Chris.
I'm going to go under. I think Alvin Kamara's workload is going to be primarily with the run game. So I'm going to go under on the passing yards, under 37. He can't.
Interesting. Again, we want to remind folks that these are actual prop bets that you could log on and wager and hopefully make your viewing experience even that much more enjoyable. And also, if you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call 800-GAMBLER. They've helped the lives of many and continue to be just a phone call or a click away. Gambler support, treatment, and of course, hope. We get back. We've got our locks of the week. I will share with you my picks, and we will start doing a deep dive into these matchups with our score predictions.
Anita's three locks of the week.
All right, it's time for my locks of the week, brought to you by BetMGM Sports. All right, gentlemen, here we go. My first play is a teaser play. You've got a Browns-Kansas City game. The line is 10. The over-under is at 57. I like the over here, so I'm going to tease the over down to 51, and I'm going to pair that along with the Saints at plus 3. Again, I think a lot of points are going to be scored here in this Kansas City game. You know, both these teams, Kansas City, number one offense coming into the postseason. The Cleveland Browns, their defense, nothing to write home about. But on the opposite end, you know, the Cleveland Browns, they can do both. They can run the football coming into the postseason. Their passing game was working on all cylinders. And Kansas City's defense is nothing to write home about either. So I like the over in this, again, over 51. And in regard to the Saints, I'm going to pair it up with the Saints and go plus 3. And just really quick before I get your feedback on that, I also, my second play is that I am going to buy the half a point down with the Saints to minus 2.5. I don't believe that the third time is a charm. Again, I'm putting all my stock into this the Saints defense, specifically their front seven and being able to get after Tom Brady with 4 and keeping 7 in coverage. Tom Brady's stats, no good against this Saints secondary when he is getting pressured. On top of that, Michael Thomas has looked great. Alvin Kamara is healthy. And let's not forget special teams. We saw how crucial special teams was and what a pickle it put the Baltimore Ravens in yesterday when Justin Tucker uncharacteristically missed 2 field goals. And this is a Saints team ranked 3rd overall coming into the season in with special teams. So first and foremost, those are my first two plays, a teaser, as well as my second play is I'm buying the Saints down to minus 2.5. Thoughts?
I like it. I mean, being on the right side of 3 makes sense. I mean, if you think the Saints are going to win, having it at 2.5 versus 3 makes all the sense in the world. So I like it.
Yeah, I just think that this is a different Buccaneer team that's played, especially in week one, and just the trajectory of the two teams I see differently. And last week, obviously, I thought it was a little bit of an aberration just because Chicago isn't, I think, a very good football team on either side of the ball. And we'll get more into it, but I understand the logic, Anita. I think I see this one differently.
And last but not least, my best bet is a prop bet, and that is Patrick Mahomes over 2.5 touchdowns, and you could get that minus 120. Again, the Browns, and marinating this for a minute, the Browns have faced the easiest schedule against offensive opponents. They have faced the second easiest schedule against passing offenses, but still only ranked 25th in passing defense. The best offense that they faced all season long that ranked in the top 10 was the Tennessee Titans. And Ryan Tannehill passed for almost 400 yards 3 passing touchdowns. I just think Patrick Mahomes goes off today. So my favorite bet, my best bet on the table today is Patrick Mahomes over 2.5 touchdown passes. Gentlemen?
I think that's free money. I think Patrick Mahomes lights the Cleveland Browns defense up like a Christmas tree. Mm-hmm. I do. I mean, I'm looking at, I could easily see 4 touchdowns for Pat Mahomes, easily in this game. 4 passing touchdowns. So, yeah, I would take that.
I agree. And what else is really interesting about what you guys are saying is, you know, nowadays we're seeing a lot of those, like, jet motions right before the snap, and we've seen a shotgun snap to Patrick Mahomes, and he literally, like, just pushes it forward to who's ever in motion, which are technically passes. So kind of makes your thesis even that much stronger. So see it the same way.
All right, those are my locks of the day, brought to you by BetMGM Sports. Place your parlay, props, and future bets at the King of Sportsbooks. Get the app today. Let's go on to our phone lines. Is it Tijo in Montreal? Wants to talk about the playoff games?
Yes, yes.
Hi.
Tijo.
Welcome in.
How are you doing? How are you doing today?
Great. Welcome in. Welcome into the show.
Okay, so essentially, quickly about the games yesterday, I think that Rams didn't play bad. They played okay, but the Packers was just too much for them. Packers were just a stronger team. So I gotta agree with you today on the Patrick Mahomes at over 2.5. But I want your opinion on whether or not I should take the over 52 on New Orleans and Tampa Bay. What should I do? Should I take the over on that one?
I really don't have a play on that. And thank you for your phone call. Appreciate you listening from Montreal. That's really nice. Gentlemen, do you have a play on the over-under? Do you feel that this is going to be a high-scoring game, low-scoring game? How do you see what game script? How do you see this playing out? Chris, let's start with you.
I'm be honest with you, Anita. I liked the Saints leading up to this weekend, but now I just feel like this Buccaneers team, there's a lot to like in terms of how they're playing. The Saints didn't necessarily play their best ball, especially on the offensive side of things, against the Bears in the wild card round, whereas the Buccaneers feel like they're hitting their stride. So, I mean, if I had to lean one way or the other, I would probably say that the Buccaneers, you know, would slightly edge out the Saints. And if that's the case, then you got to think that Tom Brady's going to have a major role in that, throwing the football. So that means both quarterbacks throwing the ball. I would like the over in that one versus the under.
Mike?
Yeah, see, very similarly. You know, you look at what Tampa Bay's done over the last, really since December, 26 points, 31, 47, 44, 31 last week against a good, you know, Washington defense. So I like the trajectory of Tampa Bay's offense more than I do Chicago's, but I do think it's going to be a high-scoring game.
The bomb is about to be dropped. It's Tannenbaum's Bomb of the Week.
All right, it is time for Mike Tannenbaum's Bomb of the Week. I have a feeling writing's on the wall based on some of the comments he's made already. Mike, what is it? What is your bomb, dude?
Yep, you got it. Tampa Bay is going to go into New Orleans, and they're going to take a victory plane trip from New Orleans, Louisiana, to Green Bay, Wisconsin, and play in the NFC Championship game. And this will further cement Tom Brady's already incredibly historic career. And I think Tampa Bay is the better team. They're playing better. And I expect a Buccaneer win 27-24 over the Saints.
27-24. Chris, what is your prediction? Oh, well, actually, it is time for our predictions.
Who's going to win? Let's do some predictions.
Let's do it. So now with that cue, Christopher, what is your score prediction with that Bucs-Saints game?
I got a 31-27 Bucs. I see it similarly to Mike T. I just, with this Buccaneers offense, is too much to like in terms of what they're doing. Tom Brady finally seems like he's found a rhythm. And overall, this team is just playing with a lot more swagger than they were when these two teams met up in Week 9. So I like where the Bucs are at. I think they edge the Saints, and we move forward with Tom Brady never having been beaten by a team 3 times in the same season. It's not going to happen.
Interesting. I have it totally different than you guys. I think the Saints are the better team here, offensively, defensively, special teams. I think they get after Tom Brady. I think they rattle his cage. Again, 58 passer rating, 60% completion percentage, 6 sacks, 2 touchdowns, 5 interceptions already in 2 games against the Saints. So I've got the Saints winning this 28-20, 28-20, and then I have the Saints heading to Green Bay. And just going one step further there, I've got the Saints upsetting the Green Bay Packers and the Saints representing the NFC. So with that being said, guys, do you have the Bucks or the Green Bay Packers advancing to Tampa? Chris?
Oh, I wasn't sure who you wanted to go.
I mean, either of you.
All right, I'll go first with this one. I got this one 38-23. Chiefs. I just think that this Kansas City team has been waiting all regular season long to get to the postseason. They want to compete for championships. That's what it's about for them. I think we'll see them locked in a way that we really haven't seen them for a full 60 minutes all season. So I got the Chiefs dominating today in an offensive explosion, 38-23.
Okay, before we go to Mike for that, my question to you, though, was since you have the Bucs and the Green Bay Packers in the NFC Championship game, just out of curiosity, who do you have advancing to Tampa to take on for the Super Bowl?
I think we have a rematch of Super Bowl I, Kansas City and Green Bay.
Okay. All right, Mike, give me your prediction for today's game, Kansas City and in Cleveland.
You know, I have it same way as Chris. I have Kansas City big, 38-20 over Cleveland, and I also had it, and I said this a couple of weeks ago, I have Kansas City and Green Bay, but for maybe slightly different reasons, which is I think the league's going to have to look back at this whole idea of only having one bye for each team, each conference, because I think we saw it yesterday with Green Bay, especially with COVID protocols, not having to travel, being more rested. I think it makes a big, big difference. And I think barring something unforeseen, I just think this number one seed's going to be going to the Super Bowl over and over again. Now, could Buffalo go into Kansas City and possibly upset Kansas City? Yeah, I think so. But I think there's a strong probability that we're going to see the one seeds for years go to the Super Bowl. So I think it's Kansas City. I think it's Green Bay. Should be a great game. Whoever has the ball last, I can't wait to see it. That'll be a great game in Tampa in a couple weeks.
Interesting. I've got Kansas City beating the Browns 38-24. I don't think the score is going to dictate in regard to game script. I think Kansas City is just going to destroy the Browns, and then they maybe score a late-minute touchdown or put up 10 points late in the game. And I have Kansas City advancing. I have Kansas City losing to the Buffalo Bills. I have the Bills representing the AFC in Tampa against the Saints. I think it's going to be a Bills-Saints Super Bowl. And I'm on the fence there in regard to who I think is going to win. My heart says Bills because I just love watching them this season and what they've been able to do. But my head is saying the Saints, and Drew Brees rides off into the sunset to make a gazillion dollars in somebody's booth calling games. That's how I see it playing out.
Well, I can't wait for next week's show so we can break that down a little bit further. And I can hear this insight on how the Bills go out to Arrowhead and pull off the upset. I can't wait for that one.
Okay, yeah, it will be fun. It will be fun. 800-919-3776. All right, we still have about 7 minutes left in the show, so let's go to some of our callers, and let's kick it off with Matt in Summit. Matt, welcome in.
Hey, Anita, fellas, how are you? Thank you. I love the show. I just want to switch it back to the Jets real quick, something you guys talked about a little bit, and I just want to touch on two things. One, you know, the importance of the staff, but two, kind of the draft. You know, if you're the Jets, they have a ton of capital, and if you don't have to take a quarterback in this draft, it gives you a really good chance to accumulate a lot of draft assets, you know, trading down, et cetera. And so then it gets you back to the importance of developing Sam and building the right staff to do so. And one guy, and I'm just having fun with this, that I like throwing out there that I think is perfect, is ESPN's own Dan Orlovsky. You know, he overlapped with Saleh in Houston. He knows the Shanahan offense. He thinks Sam can thrive in it. And I really think that, you know, if Saleh really built a strong staff, and I think Dan would be a perfect candidate to rebuild Sam, you know, the Jets could be in a great spot, you know, accumulating and developing the roster away from the quarterback and then, you know, improving with Sam. Curious what you guys think.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of making sure that you have a strong coaching staff. I mean, if you're going to roll with Sam Darnold and your head coach, his focus or his area of expertise is on the defensive side of the ball, you're going to have a strong staff to be able to get Sam Darnold turned around, help him to realize his potential, but then also to put an offensive system in place that can, you know, accentuate the talents that you have with the cornerstone pieces on that side of the ball. So I'm with you on that one all the way. It's just a matter of, you know, who those individuals are going to be. And again, Mike LaFleur is going to be the offensive coordinator based on all the reports that we're hearing. So it's going to be up to him to figure out who the quarterback's coach is going to be, who's the best person to be in that room with Sam Darnold or whoever the future Jets quarterback is and trying to develop that player. Let's go to D. D, you're on New York Game Day with Mike Tannenbaum and Chris Candy.
When are they going to give Lamar weapons? I mean, he's taller than his receivers, and he's not that tall. I mean, and they drop passes. His center nearly killed him yesterday. Like, you know, enough is enough. Like, Stephon Diggs changed Josh Allen's life, and he wasn't even that good both games. So what does that say about Lamar? Yeah. Like, this is ridiculous now. And they sat, what's the name? They sat the running back. The other one, Mark Ingram.
Yeah, they didn't dress him, yeah. Yeah, I mean, listen, yeah,
and everyone wants to put it on Lamar.
Well, here's the thing. I think Lamar does have to improve on being able to throw the ball from the pocket, down the field, outside the numbers. Like, that's something that we've been saying the last couple of years. But the skill position players for the Ravens don't do him any favors. Like, and that's the part that personnel-wise they've got to improve on. Now, Hollywood Brown, you're starting to see the light bulb cut on for him in year two. But they need more. They need more guys outside of the numbers that can dictate front and coverage in order to make things easier for Lamar. Because you're right. They're asking him to do a lot of heavy lifting in that offense. And at some point, you know, that's going to take its toll. So you got to put more playmakers around Lamar. I get it. They're a run-oriented outfit. But you still got to be able to stretch the field and challenge the defense on all three levels. And quite frankly, their offense doesn't do enough of that. I don't know if you see that the same way, Mike T, but I just feel like the Ravens, personnel-wise, have to improve that wide receiver core.
Yeah, but, you know, in fairness now, they did take Hollywood Brown the first round. Now, he is small, as the caller mentioned, but, you know, he's dynamic in terms of run after catch, and I think what they're trying to build is a system where it's long handoffs and get the ball to Hollywood Brown and let him make plays in space. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about Devontae Smith, but Tavon Austin and certainly, Hollywood Brown are cautionary tales about, you know, what to do, you know, in the first round with wide receivers. But they could use another big physical receiver. I don't think there's any question about that. You know, Boykin really hasn't worked out. Dez Bryant, obviously, is just a Band-Aid. So if they could get a frontline, bigger X, somebody that could be a split end, play outside the numbers and win consistently, I think that'll certainly help. They do have excellent tight ends. I really think Mark Andrews is somewhat underrated. He helps kind of control the middle of the field.
Mm-hmm.
Sneed's been okay. His durability, he's not Cole Beasley. Sneed, to me, is like a level below. So I think that's a fair point, but I think Hollywood Brown is a step in the right direction. I think his progress is going to be important for that Raven offense.
All right, let's go to Carlos in Long Beach. Carlos, you're on New York Game Day.
Hey, how you guys today?
Pretty good. What you got for us today?
Good. Hey, Chris, you know, you and I, we spoke a couple years ago. I'm a frustrated Steelers fan. And you and I spoke a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple years ago, they got smoked by New England. I called the show during the day. You're on the air with the guys. And I asked you about Coach Tomlin. And, you know, life went on, and a couple years later, they're still playing well. But, you know, my frustration is the playoffs. He's a great coach. Has a great track record during the regular season, but his playoff record is not really strong. If you take a close look at it, he's got a lot of one-and-dones, things like that, things of that nature. But my question to you is kind of twofold. I recognize all the injuries they had this year on defense, but what happened? Is it Ben? Is it the offense? Is it Tomlin? Is it time for a complete rebuild? So I was just really curious to get your opinion on the Steelers, I guess, as a whole. What do you think?
I think it's time to figure out what you're doing at the quarterback spot. You got to think about a succession plan for Ben Roethlisberger, and I don't know if you ripped the Band-Aid off this offseason or you addressed the contract to lower his cap hit. He's got a $41 million cap hit in 2021. So they're going to have to do something to kind of address it. But the problem with Pittsburgh and going with a young quarterback is that you have a championship defense in place right now. So I just feel like that's going to be one of the biggest questions, not just with the Steelers, but around the National Football League, what that organization is going to do at the quarterback spot. Now, as far as Mike Tomlin goes, I mean, listen, it might not be the playoff success that you want, but I mean, he's got 8 playoff wins on his resume in a Super Bowl championship, and he's never had a year below 500. He's been the head coach for 14 seasons. So, I mean, as far as coaches in the National Football League, I mean, he's right up there with the best of them. He's probably a top 5 to 7 coach in the NFL. I don't know that Mike Tomlin is the biggest issue that the Pittsburgh Steelers as an organization have right now.
You know what's interesting is I think Tomlin should be there, but like this, if he ever was going to go someplace else, this would be the time where, hey, I could go get a new 6 or 7 year deal. And, you know, it's funny, when the Urban Meyer thing was going on, I'm thinking like, well, maybe Jacksonville has their eye on somebody else. I actually thought maybe it was someone like Mike Tomlin, where, you know, they give up a draft choice, much the way Tampa Bay gave up a pick for John Gruden. I'd say, hey, you know, my franchise is going to be Trevor Lawrence and Mike Tomlin, which I think if I was Shad Khan, I'd do everything I could within reason, because I agree, you know, Chris, he's been so successful for so long. But at some point, I could see him moving on and, you know, maybe having, you know, a second run with a new team and a fresh start and, you know, kind of maybe walking out the door with Roethlisberger. But clearly, they need a quarterback. That's job 1, 2, and 3 for that franchise in the offseason.
Well, that's been New York Game Day. Mike Tannenbaum, Anita Marks, Chris Canty, and we'll catch you guys next week. Enjoy the divisional round.
This is New York Game Day with Anita Marks and Chris Canty on 98.7 ESPN.